Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 28 for the week of April 3rd, 2006. Hey all, Greg Viederman, Editor-in-Chief of PC Gamer, your host today on the podcast. I am joined by Jeremy Williams, Podcast Wunderkin.
What's up, everybody?
Assistant Editor Dan Stapleton.
Howdy.
Intern extraordinaire Norman Chan.
Greetings and salutations.
And a very, very special guest. We've got Dan Morris, Associate Publisher for PC Gamer, for the first time in, I think, over a month. Right, Dan?
More greetings and more salutations. Yeah, I think it's been that long.
So Dan's here today to actually talk about, a lot of you have posted on our message boards wondering what became of Dan. And so Dan's going to sort of let you know where he's been, what he's been up to, why he hasn't been recording with us. And we'll go from there. So Dan, why don't you kick it off and let everybody know. Tell them, I guess, a little bit about what you do as Associate Publisher.
Well, I was walking down the street one day and met a friendly banjo player, and he asked if I wanted to learn how to play the banjo real well, and all it was going to cost me was my soul. I thought to myself, that sounds like a decent deal, and that's what I did. What I did was moved over to the business side of the business. After 7 years, and it's hard to believe that it was actually that long, as an editor at PC Gamer, accepted an invitation to move down a floor to where the dark overlords of business do their thing.
But figuratively speaking, upstairs.
Well, literally speaking, upstairs. Figuratively speaking, downstairs.
No.
We're on the fourth floor. Well, literally upstairs. You're figuratively upstairs.
You're right. I don't even know what floor I'm on anymore. Now, aren't you confident knowing that the guy in charge of the business unit now
can't even count floors?
Can't keep track of whether it's on the third floor or the fourth.
What could possibly go wrong?
So what you're saying is that you're a suit, right?
Yes. I don't wear one, but I am one.
Right. So Dan now he touches money. He sells advertising, and so what's been going on behind the scenes is a secret war, where all of us have wanted to have Dan on the show, myself included, but I have felt that he shouldn't be, because for the same reason that you wouldn't have a salesperson, somebody who sells ads for PC Gamer, writing editorial in the magazine. I don't think we should have a sales guy editorializing on a podcast. Jeremy, I know you feel differently, and you think that the magazines and the podcasts are different. So
right.
Tell me what you think.
I feel pretty strongly that Dan should be back on the show. But I feel that way for a number of reasons. Like you said, I think that the magazine and the podcast are different beasts entirely. And I worked there, so I definitely respect the church and state issues that you're talking about, keeping money guys away from editorials, so that you know that the opinions in the magazine are objective and they're not influenced by whatever advertising in the magazine. With podcasts, it's different. At the moment, most people doing podcasts are also the people going to the advertisers and trying to get the checks to pay the bills for the bandwidth. And that's true almost across the board. I'm a big fan of podcasts, and I think that that's not a bad thing, because there's this intimate sort of relationship between podcasters and the listeners, and there's this trust.
I agree. I think there is a bit of a difference, but Dan, I'll throw this question over to you. If you're selling an advertisement for the podcast, and just to let everybody know, that's what's happening in the not-too-distant future, so that we don't have to charge you guys, the listeners, for the podcast in order to keep it free, we're going to be throwing on some advertisements.
Very short advertisements.
Very short advertisements, but in so doing, again, it'll be keeping the podcast free for everyone. So Dan, if you sell an ad for, let's just say, Game X, are you going to feel comfortable speaking badly about it if you honestly don't like it? And do you think that you should be talking badly about it? Do you see it as a conflict?
Well, first I want to say that I now know what Saddam Hussein feels like in that little trial room.
Like, can I be the guy behind you?
Yeah,
screaming?
You can be the guy. I'm just behind like that glass wall, Norman, and I want you to be that smiling dude in the background.
Yes.
No, I mean here's how I see it. Yeah. I am like Jeremy, a huge fan of the podcast medium, and it's young and it's just developing, and it's sort of the Wild West out here. And, you know, I think it's a good thing that we're able to offer a cool show that's free, and the ads are going to help us do that, obviously. In answer to your specific question, because I've been giving it some thought, maybe there's just a simple kind of recusal system we can come up with. I mean, I think it's important for everyone to know that we're not going to have a show that's chock full of ads. I mean, we're talking about a couple of sponsors every week and maybe a grand total of 30 seconds worth of ads. So it's not like we're really going to be beholden to a lot of people, but when you flip through an issue of PC Gamer magazine, I mean, you see, we can tell pretty much on one hand who the five biggest advertisers are going to be. It's going to be the Activisions, the Ubisofts, the THQs, the EAs. I mean, there's a fairly small universe of advertisers out there. So, you know, I don't think what we're doing is rocket science necessarily, and I think we can strike a pretty good balance. But the best thing about it is, in the great tradition of voting to see if Robin's going to die in the Batman comic, is we have the technology to leave it up to listeners. So I think a poll is the way to go.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
We can definitely do that.
All right. So what we're going to have for everybody out there.
So the poll should just say, should Dan die or not? and if the vote is that he should, then you will all stone me.
Yeah, and, well, then there should be another vote on how, and we'll come up with a bunch of gruesome ways.
Yes, yes. Well, just very quickly, Dan, Norm, what do you guys think? Or I guess since Morris is actually on here, Dan, I should call you DJ. Sorry, buddy.
And see, this is where the DJ thing came from in the first place, just so everybody knows. Confusion. Personally, I do tend to lean on Greg's side here in that. You know, that it would be kind of an awkward position. But, you know, if we can work something out, I mean, Dan brings a whole lot to the show, so I hate to see him go.
I'm more on Jeremy's side, especially listening to other podcasts. I mean, I completely agree with him. Podcasters, they are the salespeople, because that's, you know,
But I would argue that that's because it is the Wild West. I think if you look down the road a year or two...
Because that's the way it is, and the way they've approached it so far, it's worked out. There hasn't been any conflicts.
You know, I think that the only way to solve this is a rumble while the vote is going on.
Hey, I will fight any one of you guys. As you know, I will take any of you on. Let's do it.
You know, the listeners, they either trust Dan or they don't, and they're going to decide that from show to show. And if they don't, they end up not trusting him, they'll just unsubscribe and we'll see that happen. But I think that Dan has built a reputation for himself and this podcast on this kind of very honest, opinionated, personality that he has. And I don't think he'll let the listeners down.
Right, but for one, I don't want to find out by having the listeners unsubscribe, because we like you guys listening. So
in Dan. That's the end of the story.
go to the website, PCGamerPodcast.com, and vote.
Yes, do that. Let us know what you think. It's an interesting topic, and honestly, as you can all tell, we're very much divided on it here. I mean, we all want Dan back. We all think he brings an awful lot to the show. It's just a matter of whether or not you guys will stand for it. So let us know.
No registration required. It'll be right there in the sidebar. Just go and click the radio button to cast your vote.
Also, look forward to my political ads appearing on a TV near you very soon.
And then we actually give out the URL. It's PCGamerPodcast.com. So, go there. And
the
then,
news.
So, yeah, news. Wired did a very interesting story this week. They call it the Culture War. And in it, this writer, Tom Standage, it looks like, talks about something that we've actually discussed here on the show a bunch, which is how over the years, how new forms of entertainment, including video games, are always met with disdain by the establishment. And I recommend that everybody go and check this story out, because he lists, you know, how novels were looked down upon, you know, in 1790 to, you know, the waltz. You know, like the dance, like the indecent foreign dance called the waltz, being looked down upon for being too sexual in 1816. And of course, movies and comic books, and even the telephone is listed. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Does the telephone make Ben more active or more lazy? Does it break up home life and the old practice of visiting friends? It's destroying our family. So.
Well, it clearly did. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah, our families are in ruins, and it's the telephone's fault. Anyway, but yeah, this is, you know, just what we've been saying. Pointed out that history repeats itself every time there's a new medium. People hate it, except, and then it catches on and takes off. That's the norm.
It's just now media has television and you know, megaphones like they've never had before.
You know what I think is specifically interesting about it, though, is that when it comes to video games in particular, is that they always talk about the violence, and what no one mentions is that TV back in the 50s was at least as violent as like TV now. I mean, even if you look at an old episode of a cowboy western, I mean, there's Indians being gunned down by the bushelful left and right. It was actually really, really violent TV even back then. And I don't think the level of violence in the media today is any higher than it was even for this generation that is now criticizing video games, the older generation.
It is a little bit more graphic. Then they never, ever showed blood, though. To me, that's a really lame, you know, argument. Like, even like the how a lot of games are rated M just because there's some blood. I mean, if you blow somebody's head off and there's no blood, it's still pretty graphic in my mind.
But the blood makes you bloodthirsty.
Right.
That's kind of related to that. There's this new story about this Harvard study. These grad students said that they studied M-rated games and found that there was an average rate of 104 violent deaths per hour.
We were talking about that earlier today, and we think that's not high enough.
Yeah, I question Harvard's elite gaming skills, because I kill way more than 104.
And I think I get killed more than 104 times per hour in Battlefield.
Yeah.
See, that's why it's not so bad. It's not a whole lot of people dying. It's mostly just like the three worst guys on the server.
Lousy Harvard noobs.
Yeah. So as always, I was going to add to that I think that it surprises me. It constantly surprises me that smart, educated people really don't learn lessons from the past. I mean, these are very obvious examples. You know, comic books, they went after comic books, they went after rock and roll. Like, can Hillary Rodham Clinton not see that her attack on video games is exactly the same thing?
Oh, and you know what? She's using the same specific language. Like, she talked about GTA stealing the innocence of our children, is what she said. Mm-hmm. The name of Wortham's book, of course, about comic books was Seduction of the Innocent. They're even going back and stealing the very same kind of key code words to use again.
Yeah, I think Hillary probably genuinely feels this way, but politically, it doesn't matter if she does or not. She would still be doing this because it works. If that's what history proves is that this kind of thing gets attention and gets people riled up.
Now, one more thing on this Harvard study. It says the report's conclusion is that kids shouldn't play M-rated games. I'm glad they spent their time to figure that out.
Yeah. Durr.
Time and money well spent.
You have to be smart to be at Harvard, don't you?
That's the rumor, but I'm not so sure anymore.
So you would think they would know enough to know that M-rated games are not supposed to be sold to kids.
Why? Just because it has, you know, 17 and up on the box in great big letters? Anyway.
Yeah. So actually, moving on.
Can I do a study on porn and see how many boobies I see?
I'll bet it's more than 104 in your case.
Yeah, but if you do some digging
I was going to say, hopefully it's not 103 nipples that he has.
Oh, yeah, an odd number is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, in the case of the story he's about to mention, it would be an odd number.
Yeah, actually, transitioning smoothly into Nipplegate, which actually might not be a news story. It's been brought to my attention, but as a website, which website was it?
Xbox or something.
So an Xbox website earlier this week was reporting that the new Tomb Raider was going to be delayed by a few days on the PC because somebody had discovered buried deep in the code a texture for one of the models in the game that actually has an exposed nipple.
And they have obvious texture actually on that site.
Yeah, they have a picture of the nipple, of the texture with the nipple.
Don't go there, kids.
Whatever you do, for God's sake, stay away
from the nipples.
It'll scar you forever.
Avert your eyes.
But the truly funny thing is that they're not, you can't, in the game, you can't See the nipple. They basically they created the models nude so that they could dress them in various different outfits.
Which I'm not quite sure I understand, but go ahead.
Well, I guess so they could reuse the models for other scenes in the game.
But how does the texture? How does the texture make any difference?
A texture or a?
It's a model. It's the model texture.
Right.
Well, the model itself, I don't think actually has a little pointy thing on the breast. It's the texture.
Exactly.
That has.
Yeah.
So how does it? Because textures are inherently flat. So
What I guess happened was some artist who was a guy was drawing the nude drawing the nude texture for whatever reason. So that I guess if they were drawing, I would guess like skirts versus pants, you'd still see nude leg, for example, or nude arm or nude shoulder. So they got a little bit carried away and drew a nipple that they didn't need to.
We've all been there.
Yeah, we've been there. We understand what that's like.
I drew a nipple I didn't need to just the other day.
Yeah.
Superfluous nipple, you might call it.
But an equally superfluous nipple in this case, because, you don't see it in-game. You can only see it if you rip the texture files out of the game, like if you're trying to mod it or specifically looking for mature content.
This is different, very different from Hot Coffee, because Hot Coffee there was some stuff in there that was actually set up to be played as a game, but it was disabled. Somebody figured out how to turn that on.
Right, but this you still have to hack that. And I guess the argument here is that the potential to hack it and to remove the clothing textures is possible. And when you
possible, but this is not. This isn't even mapped onto any of the models. This you would have to go in and basically make a whole mod to create it. It's just in there, but it's not attached to anything.
But it's all moot. It's all moot.
It's all moot. Yeah, it sounds like it's all moot because apparently the nipple texture was only in the UK edition. It's not in the US edition, and they're launching on schedule. But just the whole idea that this sort of, the fear that comes about because of all the political pressure these days from people like Mrs. Clinton, that a game would... They'd even consider pushing a game for a few days to pull out a texture that nobody will ever see.
I have a question. What is more harmful for my kids? Is it the 104 deaths per hour or is it Lara Croft's nipple?
I've got an answer for you. I'd say it's neither. I don't think either of them are going to damage your kids, but luckily you have the right as an adult since it's mature content. If you don't want your kids to see the violence or the nipple, don't get them the game.
I have a better solution, which is that I don't have kids.
But that be a lesson to all of you, don't have kids.
No. Yes.
I would think that a lot of violence could be harmful to a very young child. But a nipple, these are children that spend, the first how long of their lives that looking directly at one because they have to eat.
I was nine.
Yeah. and then they're not allowed to see them again until they're 18. But it's
kind of reminds me of, do you remember when 3D Mark came out? Was it 3D Mark? Was it NVIDIA demo?
I always
think
of nipples when I think of 3D Mark.
I think it was an NVIDIA demo.
Remember those days?
It was like two years ago. They had that fairy model that was prancing around. But if you change the name of the EXE file to a certain thing, then it would load up without any clothes.
Really?
Yeah. So it wasn't even a mod. That's definitely more like the Hot Coffee thing because
that's an Easter egg.
It's a modded.
Why didn't anyone tell me, damn it?
You just gave their downloads a big boost, I think.
They're gonna have 50,000 more accesses.
Right. But you just changed the name of the EXE to something that's not whatever it was and
to
then
norm.exe.
Yeah.
The norm is a perv.
That was interesting. I didn't learn that. Was there any big uproar about it back then? And this was before.
Not at all.
Right. Yeah.
I think because news outlets didn't pick up on it, and it was only a community thing. But people in the forums would post on it.
I would go as far to say that the news outlets didn't even know that kind of thing would be news at that time.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah. Now they're all over it. It's like blood in the water.
It turns out that Norman has personally verified every digital nipple ever created.
it's a hobby of mine.
Encyclopedia of digital.
He's
nipples.
Got the world's largest collection.
Well, something else that happened this week, and I'm thinking there'd probably be even more outcry if Bethesda had added nipples to their horses. But
I'll pitch this in a second, but carry on.
Okay, all right. So Bethesda. I guess in the past week or so, they launched on Xbox Live for Xbox users and on the PC for Oblivion, horse armor. that you had to pay to get. It was $2.50. It was $2.50. I was $2.50 on Xbox and $1.99, $2 for the PC. And for some reason, it's beyond me. There was a huge outcry. People seemed to not be happy, to just be upset that Bethesda was charging for extra game content, which really surprised me.
I think they were upset because it was just horse armor, and if the game was more moddable, it is very moddable.
For PC.
That's something that people could just make a mod for themselves, like reskin a texture or import new
characters.
They can. They absolutely will. This is just Bethesda giving people extra content. You don't need it to play the game. Tons of people by this point have beaten the game without horse armor or horse nipples, and they didn't have any difficulty.
But the argument is that because they're selling it, it kills the possibility that they'll give it away for free.
Sure.
And I think the community would rather they support it by giving it away for free than trying to make money off it.
But that's completely their right.
And it's the future. I mean, every one of these guys is talking about microtransactions as a way to drive revenue, with the game ongoing.
And we're behind the times. I mean, a lot of the Asian markets have been doing this in MMOs for years.
They're built on this. Yeah.
With MMOs, it makes a lot more sense because when you're buying a unique item, you're sharing that with the community. I mean, you can go with someone and say, ha, look at this. This is really cool armor that I bought. But when you're playing a single-player RPG, it's just for your own benefit.
So your argument is that because you get to brag, then it makes it all right for them to
No, it makes it a more worthwhile purchase.
Well,
no,
if you don't want it, don't buy it.
Don't buy it, yeah. Especially in a game like Oblivion, which is basically a single-player MMO. I mean, the world is that open. I like the extra content, And Maybe I want horse armor. Maybe my horse was getting his ass kicked, and this will help me out.
Personally, I'm not planning on buying any stuff like this, but I like that it's available. The more stuff that's available, and if they're selling it, they're motivated to make more of it. If people actually buy it anyway, then so there's just more stuff available. And what's wrong with that?
I'm going to write to my senator to complain about how video games are making kids more materialistic.
Yeah. I'm actually curious, Dan. Something you just said. I mean, DJ. You said you'd never buy anything like this.
I wouldn't buy just an item. I would buy more quests,
which they're talking about adding.
They're saying that the next upgrade will have more than just horse armor. So, and that's cool, but I mean, if it's just a little item like this, I don't need that.
But
I like that it's available.
One good point that I was talking to Ryan McCaffrey at OXM, your sister mag, and one good point he made is that the money from the sales from this almost go entirely to Bethesda,
right?
Which is good, and so this is kind of a good way to support Bethesda rather than just buying the game, because obviously a ton of money from buying the game goes to the publisher. Who knows how much Bethesda actually ends up seeing?
Actually probably a very small royalty.
Yeah.
So I support them in this, and I would encourage anybody out there who's listening who was thinking that this was a bad thing to change their mind and. If you're interested in any of this content, pay for it. It goes right to Bethesda. It's going to help them make better games. They're going to stay around longer, and they're going to make more games and more content that you enjoy.
And if you don't want their stuff, go download some mods. Oh, the other thing that I was going to mention when you first brought this story up was that there has already been a topless mod released for Oblivion. That just removes the bra that's welded onto the female characters. That actually just removes something. I don't think there were nipples underneath, but somehow that's not scandalous.
I'd buy that for a dollar. take that away. You're taking something away, and I'm paying for it.
But would you pay $1.99? That's the question.
That's too much. That's a little too much.
Because it looks like they're charging $2.
That's a dollar a nipple, Greg.
Yeah, it's a dollar a nipple.
Not quite.
Depends on the quality of the nipples. But, Bethesda's even said they've been asked about it a bunch at this point. When asked if they were going to stick at this price point, we don't know. We just started doing this. It's a bold new experiment. There's nothing set in stone. This just seemed like a reasonable price point. Other companies are doing this already on Xbox Live. This trend is here, and I would argue that it's a good thing. So.
On the subject of Oblivion, Greg, Sandy's about to kill me if she doesn't get this game working in our house.
I've got a PC that I'm supposed to set up for Dan. His old one died,
She's literally, we have a laptop working that it can't play any games, but right. it's good for day-to-day survival. She's literally, every day when I get home from work, she's like staring at Oblivion forums looking sad.
Oh, God.
she's like, you know, when you were in the mall at holiday time and you saw like a 7-year-old kid just looking in the window, kind of like desperately longing for, it's breaking my heart. We have to get her Oblivion quickly.
All right. I will get that system up and running for you so that your wife can play Oblivion.
Thank you. Me too.
You're welcome. Something else that's exciting, we've been talking about this for a number of weeks, getting Windows installed on Intel Macs.
Well, now official.
Now official. Apple has released their own software update that allows people to do this with their permission and do it fairly damn easily. I guess it's applebootcamp.com?
It's like apple.com/...
/macOS/bootcamp.
Yes.
Oh dear
so
God.
What it is really is there's a firmware update that allows the Macs to natively run XP without conflict.
It basically has support for BIOS, for the old CMOS.
Right. What bootcamp is the drivers that everyone was waiting for, the video drivers that allow the ATI cards and I forget which ones are in there, ATI and or NVIDIA cards in the Macs. To run games at decent speeds, so you can now play any game on an Intel-based Mac. Unfortunately, the only Intel-based Macs that are out there right now are the iMac, the Mac Mini, and the MacBook Pro. None of which can't drop a real graphics card in there, like
right.
a games-oriented graphics card. So their performance is not going to be rivaling anything like an XPS laptop or something like that. Because they're not geared towards gaming, but the towers are supposed to be due out in a few months, and when those come out, you'll be able to put any graphics card you want in them, and it'll be just as good as any PC.
The question is, did Apple release this because did they feel compelled to release this now because of the recent crack?
Yeah, I think that the timing is too suspicious. I mean, if they were going to do it on their own, they probably would have. Done it on their own before it was done, by the community. But I guess they figure if they're going to do it, then, they should legitimize it a little bit because it seems like something people really want.
I was going to say, to be fair, though, that the users did this about 5 seconds after the Intel systems had launched. I mean, I'm not sure that they gave Apple enough time to actually get their own version out.
It was a couple weeks, and it was cool that they gave the users a chance to win that prize money. I mean, it was over $10,000, I think.
Yep.
But that wasn't an Apple-sponsored
No,
that
it wasn't.
A community-sponsored content.
And it was kind of fun to see that unfold, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe they hired that guy, or will. But I just think this is a great thing because I know Mac users that are really excited about being able to play Windows games because, I mean, games are what brought me over from the Mac. I was on a Mac until I graduated high school.
Now with Bootcamp, do you still have to install OS X before
in order to use Bootcamp?
You already have it installed.
Right. So they're not going to lose any sales on their OS because you're still going to have the Mac OS and then the Windows on top of that.
Yeah.
But it won't be a Windows-only piece.
Well, the only way to get a Mac is it comes with OS X.
Mm.
But they could conceivably lose software sales if people decide they want to stay primarily in the Windows environment.
But they still make most of their money off of the hardware. So
that would be so odd, though, for people to buy a Mac machine just for the box. I mean, that's going to be a pretty
small
percentage.
Not really, though.
That's the power Steve Jobs has.
Before Norm cut me off, I was going to say that I also have at least one friend now who is now planning on buying an Intel Mac and just using Windows for games. So
yeah.
And they're really nice looking machines. The MacBook Pro in particular it's less than an inch thick. It's really a beautiful machine. Though
well, not only is
it
beautiful, it's really
right
powerful
now.
Too. It has that new Intel dual core CPU.
Right.
And I don't think that's out on PCs actually yet.
But that's that's different.
I've seen
DJ.
A few.
I think what your friend's doing is probably what most people are going to do, is to buy a Mac to use the Mac programs, but use Windows when they have to play games or use whatever Office apps are only on Windows.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly why this is such big news. This is going to be really cool.
I'm actually excited. I mean, as much as I actually can't stand the Mac interface, like I just don't like the GUI. I said last week I don't find it at all intuitive. I'm excited. I know. I am. I'm excited. I mean, here at the office, you know, we've got this sort of divide here at PC Gamer where the editors, we've all got PCs to play our games, and the art staff, they've got Macs to do the layout. I've always wanted to be able to help them with layout, you know, do copy fitting and things like that, that would actually sort of make the magazine, putting the magazine together faster and more streamlined. And so the idea of a system that would allow me to do both things, like work in both environments, man, I think it's going to be huge for publishing in particular. I'm seriously considering buying one of these things. It's crazy. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I'm seriously considering when they build the desktops, I'm thinking about getting one.
And you know publishers are going to love it because anything that broadens the installed base of PC gamers, which now Mac people are going to be, those who have this, that's just a big boon to them.
And it's good for Microsoft because they sell X copies of Windows to all these Mac users.
Right. They specify on the boot camp site that you should absolutely have a licensed version of Windows. But we should also point out that while our art staff does use Macs to lay out the magazines, they have PCs right next to them so they can play MMOs all day.
Yes.
And Greg,
Joe's always got Battlefield running.
Being late.
Greg, this issue of the Mac OS sort of being foreign, I totally understand where you're coming from. I didn't get it. I don't like the fact that you can't maximize Windows. But when I got my wife a Mac Mini, I just started tinkering with it, and it's just sort of become this sort of extension of my geekdom. You know, just sort of getting familiar with OS X.
It's kind of like being bilingual.
Right, exactly. It's just sort of an extension of the hobby.
But isn't that just sort of like, aren't you just falling prey to Steve Jobs' marketing genius? Like I like that it's not intuitive. I like that it's obtuse, and that
it
makes me feel like a geek to sort it all out.
But you have to learn it.
It is intuitive. It is intuitive. It's just that Greg is so used to Windows that it's counterintuitive to do anything else.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. And again, as much as I say that I don't like the GUI, I like a lot of the applications. I like what the system is capable of, and so a system that can do that and allow me to play Oblivion and of course my beloved Space Rangers 2. That's something I seriously got to contemplate.
I saw a forum where a guy had actually run 3DMark on his Intel Mac with Windows XP using Bootcamp.
Yeah. We are planning on doing our own benchmarks.
Oh, cool. Because I'll be curious to see what they actually mean. I don't actually know what the new scores mean with 3DMark 2006, but he got, I think, like around 1700. How does that fare?
Ouch. That's not very high at all.
No, yeah, I'm a little bit out of the loop now that I don't do the hardware anymore.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think my home PC scored around 7,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But again,
it's very heavily graphic.
These things are not built for gaming
for
right now.
Right.
The towers, that'll be a different story.
Yeah.
He wants to run PC Mark and see what the score is, because that's more CPU intensive.
He did that
from
too.
What I hear, the MacBook Pros have some serious CPU power behind them.
Yeah.
So.
And then the last bit of news here, which is a little interesting, I guess. Jeremy finds it more interesting than I do, is that Microsoft has acquired a game studio that makes games exclusively for Microsoft, that being Lionhead.
I like the games they make.
I do too.
They're a cool developer. They take their time, obviously, but I like what the end result is.
And they don't always deliver on their promises. But they were overambitious a lot.
The interesting thing to me is I know that the guys who made Ragdoll Kung Fu actually left the company in December to start their own little indie developer house in London. And I wonder if they saw this coming. It'd be interesting to find out like exactly how long this has been in the works. But
what I want to know is how long before Peter Molyneux jumps ship and starts a new company.
Again.
I mean, this is the same thing that happened when EA bought Bullfrog.
Yep.
And then he left and started Lionhead. So history is probably going to repeat itself again eventually.
I think it might be part of the contract, you know, that they want him to stay.
I'm sure it is. I mean, he is the talent behind it, or like the figurehead.
The lion head.
Yeah. So
the head lion.
He is the figurehead of Lionhead.
Yes.
But I'm sure there's, you know, probably some amount of time he's required to stay there, but I'm sure he'll jump ship immediately afterwards and start over again.
At some point, doesn't he have all the money in the world and he just has to kind of quit?
Yeah. I don't think that's a requirement.
The guy's got to be pushing the hundreds of millions mark at this point.
He was when he sold Bullfrog. want to get to some questions?
Yeah, let's do that.
Hey guys, Phil in Colorado Springs again. Hey, heard on the last podcast that Splinter Cell 4 was going to be basically for the Xbox 360 exclusively, and then maybe they'll add it on for the PC later. You know, I get a little irritated with this line of thinking. I mean, there would be no Splinter Cell, there would be no Sam Fisher if it wasn't for the PC gamers who went out there and, you know, paid for the game, bought machines that could run the game, and then have these guys turn around and take a franchise that we helped them build and have become loyal fans for, and then just turn it over to a console that most of us probably don't even own. It's extremely irritating, and it almost makes you want to backlash against these companies and not buy their product when it gets ported over. No offense to the console folks, but I think PC gamers are by far more serious gamers. There's a much bigger commitment of discretionary income and things like that when it comes to PCs. And I just find it kind of insulting that these companies who made their bread and butter on PC gamers turn around and make us an afterthought. I mean, if I'm wrong here, tell me. But what do you guys think?
I don't know that we said that you know, it was going to be Xbox exclusive and maybe it'll be ported to the PC. I mean, it's definitely coming to the PC. It's just, I think we may have said that it was going to have an Xbox lead. And, you know, that's, of course, because there are, while, you know, PC gamers are probably more dedicated to our platform and we do put a lot more buying power into it, there are more Xbox gamers out there. So, you know, it's a matter of quantity versus quality. So.
Although not currently. What do they have, like 1.5 million units installed out there? Like, they don't have a lot. They've only recently, I think, maybe met up with demand. The 360 has been, up until very recently, extremely hard to get. And the install base isn't that large.
So they're trying to get it bigger. So.
Yeah. It is frustrating. I think, you know, as time goes on, well, a couple things are going to happen. I think, with any luck, you know, Microsoft is pushing their new Games for Windows initiative pretty hard, and they'll be pushing it through the Vista launch and beyond, which is, I guess, now in January, and hopefully doesn't slip any further. But I think what you'll start seeing is, you know, the multi-platform games that do come out on the PC and on the consoles they'll probably be synced up closer than they are today, so they come out on every system at the same time. But I think you'll also start to see just sort of more, you'll see more focus on the PC, on games that PC gamers like the most. You're going to see a lot more, you know, RTS. And when I say like the most, I mean spend the most dollars on. You'll still see you know, big budget RTS games like, you know, Rise of Legends, Company of Heroes, World in Conflict, what have you. You know, those are still big. A lot of MMOs for sure, and a lot of shooters. But I think for whatever reason, a lot of those sort of, you know, sort of hybrid shooter sneaker games like Splinter Cell just don't do as well on the PC as they do on the console.
Well, there's another interesting angle here too, which is that a lot of the people I've talked to have said that the PC is kind of going to be the minor leagues, so to speak, of development in the sense that new IP gets tried there, new ideas get tried there, because the barrier of entry is so much lower, and the profits, honestly, are so much higher in terms of how much money on the dollar a PC publisher can make for a product, that's where the new stuff is going to be tried. You know, the listener's question was about why are they proving these ideas on the PC and then taking them to the console? I think that's going to be what you're going to see more and more, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think the PC is always going to be the place where the new ideas happen and are tried out and proven, and I kind of dig that about the PC. All you're getting on console is proven franchise stuff.
It would just be nice if once it's proven on the PC that it stuck around on the PC. But, again, you know, if PC gamers don't want it, if they're not speaking with their wallets, then, you know, publishers have no choice but to bring them over to the consoles where those types of games do sell better.
Yo, this is Jake Edelman coming out of Wonder Lake, Illinois. I just had a few questions regarding the job market for game developers these days. I mean, how's it looking? Is it pretty competitive, or are they really hurting for guys? And also, on another end, what looks best on a resume? 4 years of college, a bachelor's, a master's in computer science, or would they rather have actual on-the-job experience, or maybe, say, a vocational school? On another note, when it comes to 3D graphics these days, what's more used, DirectX or OpenGL, as far as graphics APIs goes? because both seem to be pretty powerful. I mean, Doom 3 uses OpenGL, and on the other hand, DirectX is used in games for like Halo and Age of Empires and stuff like that. So, also heard some rumors that the next version of DirectX, DirectX 10, will be coming out with Windows Vista. Just wondering if you guys heard any rumors about that, and maybe you could verify it. Love the podcast. Keep it up. Peace out.
We have never hired any programmers, so.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Although that's we hired Jeremy. He's something of a programmer. Aren't you, Jeremy?
Oh, I know HTML like nobody.
He can put pictures on the website and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
And I tell the text. I'm sure we've all got plenty of friends that are in the industry. You know, take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt, because yeah, like DJ says, we hire writers, not programmers. There seem to be an awful lot of jobs for programmers, certainly entry level programmers. If you're want to get your foot in the door, be prepared to work long hours for not a lot of pay to start out, certainly. And but yeah, I mean, if you are qualified, which brings it to point two. I would say that on-the-job experience is probably more important than a college degree, but that's going to differ from company to company. They're all going to have different requirements. But if you can show them something that nobody else can do, or that you can do faster than anybody else, I think you're going to find that these companies, so some of these companies at least, are interested in you.
Certainly, I think the most important thing is probably to have a demo portfolio. Just make you know, a technology demo, show what you can do.
Well, there are actually two reasons for that. A great tech demo is great, but the other thing that I have heard a lot is they want you to have worked with people on a team to cooperatively build a product, because what they are finding is that if they hire these young guys who just can't fit into team environments, then they're screwed. It's like they can't even use the guy. So I know the people who are really getting snapped up right now are the guys who have worked on mod teams and have done coordinated efforts and have shown the skills in the demo, because they know not only can the guy do his business, but he'll actually be a productive member of what is a very intense group effort.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I read an interesting interview with the guys at Crytek, the makers of Far Cry and Crysis, and what they had to say on this topic was, if you don't need to make money, definitely look into the mod community and make a mod. If you want to make money and this is your first game, don't look at the PC mass market. Look at the casual games market, the cell phone games market, and even something like Xbox Arcade, where one or two guys can make a game and sell it at a cheap price for profit. So that would be a way to look at your first
game. This guy just wanted to find out about being a programmer, or was he talking about all facets of the gaming industry? Because
he's talking about the different 3D standards, so I think he's probably thinking about being a programmer.
And on that question, as far as OpenGL versus DirectX 10, if you've seen the Crysis video from GDC, and you can see that in any number of places, but that's using DirectX 10, and that is unbelievable. So I would, if I were trying to learn, I would learn that.
Yeah, Direct3D is definitely more popular.
They're moving away from OpenGL. It used to be almost like 50-50, mostly because of what it was doing. It was primarily OpenGL focused.
And still is.
And yeah, they are. But the DirectX API is just so much more accessible now, and Microsoft has done a really good job supporting it and putting features in it.
Hi, this is Ben from Connecticut. I was recently trying to make a Battlefield movie, and I wanted to know if you knew of any programs for editing and cutting, and within reasonable price. And that's all. Thanks.
Jeremy?
Yeah. Well, if you can spend $100, Sony makes a pretty decent version of Vegas, which is the audio and editing and video editing program that I use. What's this site? Let me find it real quick.
$100 is still a lot of money. I think what he wants to do is
use iMovie.
Well, if he's on a PC because he's doing it for Battlefield 2, he'll probably want to record the game using the in-game battle recorder, then probably pay, I think, $10 for Fraps to capture that as a AVI file, and then he can just edit that in the free Windows Movie Maker.
Fine.
I guess there is a free Windows Movie Maker.
Problem solved.
Use the free Windows player.
It's not that bad.
Hey, this is Nick Segmiller in Salt Lake City, Utah. I'm a big fan of the show, but I was noticing recently that your panel of regulars seems to be very one-sided in your gaming preferences. I love single-player RPGs, and the only time I've ever heard any of you talk about playing one was when Greg talked about playing Dungeon Seeds 2. And other than Jeremy and his stint with World of Warcraft, it seems like you all play only either first-person shooters or real-time strategy. What's the deal with that?
And besides Oblivion, which we...
Yeah. I guess you didn't listen to our last podcast.
Yeah, we all enjoy a good single-player RPG. Fallout is a long-time favorite of mine. Greg is widely known for his Diablo fetish.
Yes.
I think the only genre that goes kind of underrepresented is the sports genre.
And the sim genre.
That's why we have Mahood, but on the podcast.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go on.
I was going to say the sports genre is well represented by myself.
Well, the sports mogul genre.
No, and the actual sports genre, but the mogul stuff as well.
Hello, PC Gamer. This is Jay Carr from Provo, Utah. I'm a poor, innocent Mac user, and I have a simple request for you. You're probably thinking I want you to pimp Macs. Perhaps discuss their Unix-based aesthetically pleasing and stable operating system OS X, or perhaps their up-to-standard video and sound cards like the NVIDIA 7800 or ATI 1600, or maybe I want you to mention that a lot of college students use Macs, and since college students love video games, Mac gaming should have a significant market, but I don't want you to do any of that. I have a much simpler request. Probably the first thing that comes to mind when anyone mentions Mac gaming to you, could you please mock, and I mean hardcore mock, the state of Macintosh gaming? Just verbally destroy it like a rocket launcher mowing down a tank in Battlefield 2. Not that I'd know, being a Mac user and all, but I have an image of something going poof, and that's what I'm looking for. Anyway, my theory is this. Steve Jobs, CEO of Apple, has a fixation on being cool. I'm hoping that if enough flack is thrown at Apple's lack of gaming prowess, that Steve Jobs will realize he isn't as cool as he thinks he is, and will remedy the situation by fully implementing OpenGL and, if they can swing it, you know, if Microsoft will allow it, Direct 3D. And then, hopefully, he can give me and all my fellow Mac users access to games like Half-Life 2, Far Cry, Neverwinter Nights 2, and if all possible, because it's been mentioned in a few publications, most notably yours, Psychonauts.
All right.
Like we said, he don't need to anymore. it's become a moot point.
He probably submitted that question before Boot Camp was released.
Well, and also, he probably has a Mac that doesn't have an Intel chip, which
right.
a lot of Mac users are going to be in that same boat. But yeah, I think the writing's on the wall, and what we're going to see is probably a lot less Mac, as little as there is. Like we're going to see even less game development on the Mac, and everybody will just, you know, make more PC games, and hopefully, you know, does anybody even make Mac-exclusive games anymore?
Exclusive? Not many.
Yeah.
I have to say the greatest game of all time was on a Mac, though.
What's that?
Oregon Trail.
That's true. But I wouldn't call that the greatest game of all time. It was highly amusing to put my friends' names in and try and get them to die of cholera.
On the headstone?
I have a question. What the f*** was Oregon Trail?
Oh, my. Oh, I'm sending you a URL. It's going to
change
your
life.
It's going to change your life.
I've never heard of it.
What?
It was an old game for the Apple II.
They're joking. You guys are joking, right?
No. On the Apple II, when I was like 9 years old, the very first computer game I ever played, it was in school as part of computer class.
Yeah.
Was Oregon Trail, and it's all about being a wagon pioneer headed west, and you had to hunt and you had to find food.
You had to allocate food. You had to clothe your family, and then
they could buy wagon wheels, and you could die and end up on a headstone.
Wait a minute, Dan. You can buy wagon wheels?
Yeah. You broke axles.
Whoa.
Anything that can happen to you on the Western Trail.
Send me that link,
man.
All
right,
How can you not have played that?
Wagon wheels.
Oregon
Both
Trail.
Both you and Greg
was,
are crazy.
That game was a classic.
I'm sorry that I didn't know about the game.
There's got to be a web-based version of it.
And once you reach Oregon, glorious.
That game ruled.
There were about 17 versions of it through the years.
I had a friend in high school who had a game on his Mac called Dark Castle, I think.
That was an awesome game.
And I was impressed. That was a very cool game. Had digital sound. Of course, it was all black and white.
Yeah. That and Lode Runner.
Well, Lode Runner was on every computer.
Yeah, but I played it on the Mac.
Can we do a playlist now, please?
Yes. So DJ, what are you playing this week?
Let me think. What the hell? I've been playing World of Warcraft and Oblivion.
Hey, you're still playing.
Yeah, I'm up to, I hit level 17 last night.
Morris, I know you don't have a currently have a functioning PC. Have you?
Ah, here's where I'm going to surprise you.
Yeah.
I don't have a good functioning PC, but the laptop is still working, which means I can still play Baseball Mogul.
Oh.
And as you all know, it's baseball season again. Thank the heavens.
I think you can play that on an Apple too, can't you?
You can play it on an Atticus.
On a freaking Casio watch. Yeah.
You can play it on anything, a Texas Instruments calculator. Literally you could play it on a Pentium, you know, an old school 486 might run it. Actually, I think Pentium is the minimum requirement. But
they just announced a new one.
Yeah, for the new year.
2007. Yeah.
So much fun, that game. I will never get tired of it. I've been playing it for years. It's just a blast.
And in fact, wasn't that the game that actually got you interested in baseball? Like, weren't you not even a baseball fan prior to that?
I used to be, ages ago, a huge baseball guy. And then after that first strike, I kind of tuned out, and I never really got back in. And it wasn't until Baseball Mogul really got me back into it with a passion. And then I went to 12 games last year. So, yeah, I'm back big time.
Oh, I want to just call out real quick that I actually had a chance to play with a development version of an Origami device,
which, in case you don't know, is the new Microsoft
right.
Portable
it's PC. A handheld, ultra portable handheld PC, touchscreen, and everything. And I could see playing games on that. So, I'm not ruling out. It's not really high powered. It's not going to play like a shooter or something really well. Might play, you know, like Quake 2 or something, but. But you know, I could definitely see playing strategy games on it. So no, sorry, Tim.
Oblivion with little bits of the new true crime game in between for a review.
Very interesting. How far into Oblivion are you?
I'm just doing side quests right now. The main quest, it's fun, but I want to level up. Even though it's kind of pointless because of the whole leveling up business.
Right. And Jeremy, do we even need to ask what you're playing?
Well, I was playing Oblivion. I was about 18 hours into it. And the thing is, I cheated.
Tisk.
Did you buy gold?
I didn't.
He bought horse armor.
That'd be funny.
You wrecked the game for yourself. I know you didn't do that.
I did. I went to a forum. I found out what the code was to finish this quest that was just utterly boring. And it ended up giving me 1,000 more gold than I meant to give myself. And I said, right. That was so easy. This game is now no fun.
That was a gateway cheat code.
Yeah, it kind of pissed me off. So I wish that it wasn't that easy to cheat. I mean, I wish you at least had to put some sort of a flag on the shortcut to enable cheats. They just make it too easy.
It's easy to not cheat because you know, as an adult, if you cheat, you're going to wreck the game for yourself. So just don't do it, man.
I'm not an adult, Greg.
Seriously, that's the same thing. There's a lot of cheats in the PC version. You can just bring down the console and basically, you know, get yourself through any mission you're having trouble with, or give yourself all the gold you want. I'm totally staying away from it, at least until I'm through the main quest.
Yes, let this be for that very reason. Yeah, let this be a warning. I think that's part of the appeal of MMOs, is that you can't cheat, you can't save, you can't do anything, and so people are required to really invest themselves.
Have any of you referred to the strat guide?
I'm sorry?
Have any of you referred to the strat guide to get out of quests?
Or?
Yeah.
Oh, no, not for quests, but I did when I was building my character, or my characters, because I've built a few now. I found it very useful for that. I'm trying to avoid using it for quests when I can, you know, whenever I can.
Unless you're stuck for hours on one quest.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So I'm playing well.
I personally refuse to. Yeah.
That's the bottom line. Yep.
Bottom line, he's playing WoW. I'm, of course, still playing Oblivion. Also playing a lot of Space Rangers 2. Still playing Fight Night 3 on my Xbox 360. Sorry.
Right. Hey, when can I get Space Rangers?
We just got boxed copies in. I'll see about maybe giving you, we got a boxed copy. I will perhaps send you my Gold Master Disc if you're very interested.
Well, I'm sure I'm not the only one, but I'd love to play it.
Yeah, it's out now. What was that?
It's the only one.
No,
it's like to rip on Space Rangers because it makes Greg so mad.
Yeah. I've talked about it a lot before. It's a fantastic game. It's out now at retail and I'm sure online. I can't recommend it enough. It's just this amazing turn-based space strategy game. that brings in elements from all sorts of other genres. You know, shut up. Shut
it's
up.
No Oregon Trail.
Wait a minute now. You compared
so,
it. You compared it to Star Control 2, which is not turn-based.
Well, this is turn-based. I said it was like Star Control. I didn't say it was Star Control.
It's more. Isn't it more kind of elite-ish?
It could be. I mean, basically, you know, you're in space, you're fighting evil dominated, the evil robots that are trying to take over the galaxy. It's turn-based when you get into combat, but so long as nobody's around, it's actually sort of real-time. You know, turns are actually happening in the background, but you're not aware of them. You don't have to, you know, go X number of hexes and then click end turn.
You had me at evil robots.
Yeah. So it's fantastic. It's one of those kinds of games where you really... Anytime I ever talk about it, DJ starts, you know, falling asleep. You can't. you gotta play it to understand it. I don't think it's got like a, you know, a steep price point. I think it's like a $39.99 type game. It's so worth it. You can play the thing forever. I've been playing the game now for months on end. I just never get tired of it.
The irony over Dan snoozing at mention of a turn-based game is made all the more astounding by the fact that he's a guy who plays Laser Squad Nemesis over and over and over and over again.
I actually haven't played it in a few months, but maybe I'll get back into it. But no, I'm again, I just make those jokes to drive Greg nuts. I intend to play it, and I'll probably love it.
In unrelated news, Space Rangers 2 will be advertising in next month's podcast.
Yes.
Thanks to Dan Morris.
Thanks to me.
Salesman extraordinaire.
Then he won't be able to talk about it.
Yes. All right, folks. Well, I think that's all the time we've got.
One more thing. We got a couple questions about Battlefield 2142 that we didn't address. And if you want to know why, you can go to PCGamer.com and look on the on newsstands now part on the side there. That'll answer your questions.
Yes, we've got our May 2006 issue. Our cover story is Battlefield 2142. So there you have it. All right, so that's it for this week, everybody. I want to thank everybody on behalf of Jeremy Williams, Dan Stapleton, Norman Chan, and Dan Morris. I'm Greg Viederman. Join us next week. And as always, if you have any questions, send them to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com.
And visit the website, PCGamerPodcast.com. Cast your vote on the Dan Morris situation.
Does he live or does he die?
He dies!
No. One vote for death.
Yeah.
I really want him to come in if he's got the maracas and he's doing the peanut butter jelly time song and dance.
That's not funny. You're going to look back on that the same way that I look back on Garfield now.
It's like, funny what because it's stupid.
No, it's not even that. It's funny because you think it's supposed to be funny. When you get caught up in the phenomenon of, you know, like from when I was a kid, everybody bought all the Garfield books. I'm like, oh man, lasagna. Oh God, he loves lasagna.
That Fern sure got a beating.
But see, you're cracking me up already. That's his gold.
Dude, I hate Mondays.
Yeah, Mondays sure suck.
To be fair, I taught myself to draw by tracing Garfield comics.
Oh, boy. Strun. But yeah, you're going to look back on that in like 10 years and go, what the f*** was I thinking? It was you were caught up in groupthink.